And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, June 2nd. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information you need to take action. Let's start off with announcements. The Earth First Northwest Rendezvous is right around the corner. Cascadia Forest Defenders and the League of Extraordinary Cascadians are pleased to announce the Earth First Northwest Rendezvous starting June 10th and lasting through the 13th in the heart of the Southern Cascades. Get ready for a long, very hot summer of action with our traditional socializing and working fest, unwinding in the old forest with old friends, meeting new friends and allies, sharing meals and skills and crazy ideas and maybe a soft drink or a cup of ale. Take a plant hike, dip in the river, climb an ancient Doug Fir or Buffalo Rock, or troop into one of our nearby threatened forests. We've got an incredible old-growth site that runs for over a mile along a lovely, if potentially lethal, river, delicious water with a certain amount of medical resources, noon circles, and fabulous company that's guaranteed to increase your chances of federal surveillance and higher standing with your grandchildren, grandnephews and nieces, etc. And they're pretty good hands with wildland survival, plants, navigation, tree climbing, direct action, strategy and tactics, ecology, regional history, and many other things which you might be interested in. Expect some formalized workshops, maybe a plan on sharing what you know. You need to bring your sustainable self, which should include food, a means to prepare it. There will be no centralized community kitchen. This is old school camping. Do bring your camping gear, bug repellent rain gear, decent closed-toed shoes, a headlamp, a cup, a plate and or bowl, fork and or spoon, party clothes, biocentric point of view, capacity to disregard the rule of law or accept and support that disregard in others, tolerance and a sense of humor. Musical or similar talents are revered and appreciated. Please don't bring your dogs with or without cameras. Leg hold traps have been found in the area, and wildlife could use one less hassle on the landscape. Leave that abusive attitude at home. No secret microphones or any idea your workshop needs to be mandatory. So you want to get up in the old growth, try halt a roadless area timber sale, or get acquainted with a kayak mob or the oil blockaders? Come on out to the woods and check us out. Stick around Monday for a kick-ass action or more. Heck, why not just make a summer of it? Directions? Well, you probably need to go somewhere in the middle of Oregon and get your directions off the website. That would be earthfirstjournal.org newswire. Just to let you know, there is no cell reception at the site. And if you need more information, go to Cascadia Forest Defenders at forestdefensenow.com. That webpage again, forestdefensenow.com. And the Earth First Round River Rendezvous is going to be in the Great Lakes Basin this summer. Members of MyCats have joined forces with our friends in Fen Valley Earth First to help organize the 2016 Earth First Round River Rendezvous. The rendezvous is going to be held June 29th through July 7th in Manistee National Forest. You want to watch the sunset over an endless body of fresh water on top of a sand dune while you consider the conversations, workshops, and experiences of an Earth First Round River Rendezvous? This is a possibility as organizing for the 37th annual Earth First Round River Rendezvous is currently underway. Folks affiliated with the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands, along with other regional eco-defenders, have joined Fen Valley Earth First to plan this year's rendezvous. We will continue working hard through July to create space for everyone who attends to have a great experience at the 2016 rendezvous. As this organizing body contains many new faces to the Earth First movement, we are seeking to use this as an opportunity to strengthen our movement here and abroad, as well as deepen our connections with each of you and the Great Lakes Basin. We've been working hard gleaning, organizing, scouting, and strengthening friendships in preparation for the rendezvous. The dates, once again, June 29th through July 6th, which includes a powerful new moon. Depending on indigenous consent and a couple of other factors, our first choice site is near Manistee on traditional Anishinaabeg land. The site will have walkable swimming, diving, boating, potable water, a Seeds of Peach kitchen, limited cell phone reception, and bathroom options. The rendezvous is family friendly, and camping is a 15-minute walk from the parking. Please contact the organizers if you have accessibility concerns and any other questions. They'll be putting together a gear library if you'd like to come, but you don't have what it needs to be comfortable in the woods. Please contact us. We'll have extra camping gear. If you have extra camping gear, let us know that, too. We are having ongoing conversations about alcohol at the Ronde, juggling the dynamics between creating fun, central, sober places and being honest that people are going to find somewhere to drink. There will be a Mad Trans Women's Action Coalition, People of Color Sober, and Family Camps. If you're a member of any of these groups and have any specific site requests, please contact us. Please do not bring your canine friends. Your dog's probably nice, but we don't want to meet them or their cameras. If you have conflict mediation experience and are interested in survivor-centric solutions and harm reduction, think about joining our conflict mediation team. We're looking for first aid, wilderness, first responders, medical bodywork, and or healing skills. That includes herbal healing. For our medic team, if you're interested in water purification, cooking in large groups, digging shitters, setting up tarps, please join the site logistics team. If you're a child at heart, please help with planning day activities for the younger activists. We do need someone to coordinate shuttles to the beach. That is a gentle walk or roll from the car. The trails to the swimming have the potential to be very steep. If you are planting a garden, boiling sap, birthing animals, drying beans, or getting food stamps, please allocate some for our kitchen. We'll provide breakfast and dinner. Lunch is on your own. You could also help by throwing a fundraiser for the Ronde. You could sell journals or zines, play a house show, babysit, or do a talk for a university, get a job, or send us your tax refunds. But send us some cash or fund an activist in your community that wouldn't otherwise be able to come. If you want to write a check, make it out to Forever Wild LLC or through PayPal. Put in RRR2016@riseup.net, and there will also be a link on the Fen Valley Earth First site. And email if you have any questions. We'd love to hear from you. Contact us at RRR2016@riseup.net. And we will post updates and Michigan news at fenvalleyearthfirst.wordpress.com and on the Earth First Newswire. Look forward to seeing y'all. Once again, that is the Earth First Round River Rendezvous, June 29th through July 6th in Manistee National Forest. The Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. The Montana Department of Livestock conducted a questionable hazing operation last week, as reported here on Earth First Radio, pushing buffalo off of public lands where, according to Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, buffalo are allowed to be. Buffalo Field Campaign's confronted the Montana Department of Livestock agents, who are interpreting the governor's year-round habitat decision much differently, essentially taking advantage of some conflicting language. Buffalo Field Campaign immediately contacted Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the Montana Department of Livestock hazers made their own calls to their bosses. Buffalo Field Campaign, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and the Montana Department of Livestock have calls into Governor Bullock's office, and we are all awaiting clarity on this discrepancy. In the interim, the executive officer of the Montana Department of Livestock actually gave the order to their hazers to cease and desist any hazing of buffalo on these lands until the issue is resolved. Most buffalo have already migrated into Yellowstone on their own. There are fewer than 100 in the Hebgen Basin, and they are simply enjoying their days, eating spring grass, raising their newborn calves, soaking up the sun, and shedding their thick winter coats. We did have a sad encounter with a mother and calf this week. About 3 days ago, patrols spotted a mom and her newborn, and while the baby buffalo raised her head, she never stood. We monitored the pair for a number of days. The mother never left the calf's side, even though the baby buffalo never rose. On Wednesday morning, patrols spotted the calf again, and she was lying lifeless in the grass. Her devoted mother has still not left her side. Our heart grieves with hers, yet we do take some solace in knowing that because of the new habitat they've been granted, she has been able to wait and then mourn her baby for as long as she needs without the threat of being hazed. We hope she will soon rejoin her family group. It's just a matter of time before they choose to head into their traditional rutting grounds to join up with other buffalo families and be in the company of the massive bulls who will soon start to battle each other to win the favor of the females. Our incredible crew of volunteers and seasonal coordinators are also starting their migrations. The coming of summer brings many goodbyes, and though many will return with the fall to once again answer the call of the buffalo. We have had such an amazing crew this year, it's very difficult to part ways. Even with all the challenges the buffalo suffered this year, our achievement of year-round habitat in the Hebgen Basin has diminished hazing enormously. Usually by this time of year, wild buffalo have been sorely abused and brutally forced out of Montana. But wild buffalo remain this year, and we can close the season without feeling defeated, or rather are celebrating a significant victory. Many other things are changing in the buffalo's favor, so thank you for being with us and never giving up. Together, we are making a big difference. And you can spend your summer in Yellowstone with the Buffalo Field Campaign. Volunteers are wanted. The Buffalo Field Campaign is seeking volunteers who have an earnest interest to help our national mammal, the buffalo, roam wild and free. We are seeking people comfortable with talking to Yellowstone visitors to help run our summer outreach programs. This is the 100th year anniversary of the National Park Service, and Yellowstone is expecting millions of visitors. This is a great opportunity to help educate and inspire people. Volunteers get to spend 5 days a week camping in beautiful Yellowstone National Park. While tabling, you'll meet people from all over the world and bring the buffalo's story to them. If this sounds exciting to you, please contact us, but please go to their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. to read all about the Buffalo Field Campaign and their volunteer program. If you have a donation for the Buffalo Field Campaign, please send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And if you didn't get all that information the first time, you can always go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And they have a wonderful site. Do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And big cats have been removed from Thailand's infamous Tiger Temple in this story by Picha Tanaka Sempipat, with additional reporting by Jurawi Kitaslapa. Writing by Amy Sawita Lefevre, editing by Robert Bursell, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Wildlife authorities in Thailand on Monday raided a Buddhist temple where tigers were kept, taking away three of the animals and vowing to confiscate scores more in response to global pressure over wildlife trafficking. The Buddhist temple in Kanchanaburi province west of Bangkok has more than 100 tigers and has become a tourist destination where visitors take selfies with tigers and bottle feed their cubs. The temple promotes itself as a wildlife sanctuary, but in recent years it has been investigated for suspected links to wildlife trafficking and animal abuse. Wildlife activists have accused the temple's monks of illegally breeding tigers, while some visitors have said that animals can appear drugged. The temple denies all these accusations. Monday's raid was the latest move by authorities in a tug-of-war since 2001 to bring the tigers under state control. Adisorn Nuchdamrong, Deputy Director General of the Department of National Parks, said the team had been able to confiscate the tigers thanks to a warrant obtained a few hours before the operation. "We have a court warrant at this time, unlike previous times when we only asked for the temple's cooperation, which did not work," Adisorn told Reuters. International pressure concerning illegal wildlife trafficking is also part of why we're acting now. Officials from the Department of National Parks, Wildlife and Plant Conservation in Thailand said they plan to confiscate and remove more tigers from the temple on Tuesday and send them to a state-owned sanctuary. Previous attempts to inspect the tigers have largely been blocked by the temple's abbots, but in January and February, wildlife officials removed 10 of the tigers. Thailand has long been a hub for the illicit trafficking of wildlife and forest products, including ivory, Exotic birds, mammals, and reptiles, some of them endangered species, can often be found for sale in the markets of Thailand. The government introduced new animal welfare laws in 2015 aimed at curbing animal abuse, but activists accuse authorities of not enforcing the legislation properly. And endangered Hawaiian geese are at risk from diseases spawned by feral cats in this story from the American Bird Conservancy. A new study published in the Journal of Wildlife Diseases has documented evidence of widespread contamination of habitat in Hawaii caused by feral cats. This latest research has alarming implications for the endangered Hawaiian goose, or nene, and other animals found throughout the Hawaiian Islands. The peer-reviewed study, conducted by scientists from the United States Geological Survey, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the University of Tennessee, and the state's Division of Forestry and Wildlife, evaluated the prevalence of the infection of Toxoplasma gondii among nene, the Hawaiian state bird. T. gondii is a protozoan parasite that causes toxoplasmosis in humans and wildlife and is the most commonly encountered infectious disease in nene, the study reported. T. gondii relies on cats to complete its life cycle and is excreted into the environment through cat feces. A single cat may excrete hundreds of millions of infectious eggs called oocytes in its feces. The study found between 21 and 48% of nene tested positive for past infection, depending on the island. The island of Molokai had the highest infection rate of 48%, followed by 23% in Maui, 21% on Kauai. According to the authors, the higher rate on Molokai may have been due to a conspicuously consistent presence of feral cats. This research confirms earlier studies dating from the 1970s that this parasite is probably found in tropical island ecosystems wherever there are feral cats, said Dr. Thierry Wark, the study's lead author. Recent studies also suggest that animals and humans are more prone to trauma when infected with T. gondii. Trauma is the chief cause of death for nene, and infections with T. gondii may make them more vulnerable, but confirming that they will require more studies. Nene are not the only Hawaiian wildlife to test positive for T. gondii. Other birds such as the endangered Hawaiian crow or alala, and mammals such as the endangered Hawaiian monk seals are also susceptible and have found to be killed by the infection. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, in response to increasing seal deaths, elevated toxoplasmosis as the disease of serious concern. According to the Maine Hawaiian Islands Monk Seal Management Plan, NOAA is concerned both with seal deaths and the secondary and cumulative impacts of subclinical and chronic disease. A 2013 study by scientists from the Stanley Medical Research Institute and Johns Hopkins University also called attention to cats as the means of transmission to people. Because cats are now so ubiquitous in the environment, one may become infected with T. gondii by neighboring cats which defecate in one's garden or play area, or by playing in public areas such as parks or school grounds, the study said. Indeed, as cats increasingly contaminate public areas with T. gondii oocysts, it will become progressively more difficult to avoid exposure. As well as spreading disease, cats are also a non-native predator that directly kill native wildlife on the Hawaiian Islands and on other islands around the world. In Hawaii, already known as the bird extinction capital of the world, feral cats kill endangered Hawaiian petrels, ua, newels, shearwaters, au, and palila, among others. A 2011 study recorded feral cat impacts on at least 120 different islands worldwide and determined that feral cats are responsible for at least 14% of global bird, mammal, and reptile extinctions. While we appreciate cats as pets and acknowledge the important role cats play in many people's lives, it is clear that the continued presence of feral cats in our parks and neighborhoods is having a detrimental impact on people and wildlife, said Grant Sizemore, director of invasive species programs at the American Bird Conservancy. Before another species goes extinct or another person is affected with toxoplasmosis, we need to acknowledge the severity of the problem and take decisive actions to resolve it. What is required is responsible pet ownership and the effective removal of free-roaming feral cats from the landscape. American Bird Conservancy is the Western Hemisphere's bird conservation specialist, the only organization with the single and steadfast commitment to achieving conservation results for native birds and their habitats throughout the Americas. With a focus on efficiency and working in partnership, we take on the toughest problems facing birds today, innovating and building on sound science to halt extinctions, protect habitats, eliminate threats, and build capacity for bird conservation. For more information, please visit their website at www.abcbirds.org. And turning to biological diversity news, United States green sea turtles are recovering. Happy news for U.S. green sea turtles in both the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Their recovery has prompted the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service to downgrade the animal's status from endangered to threatened. The agencies emphasized that growing threats from climate change and sea level rise mean that sea turtles remain at risk and continue to need the Endangered Species Act protections. Also, while the powerful protections of the Act have helped U.S. green sea turtles, populations in the Mediterranean, South Pacific, and Western Pacific, which don't benefit from those protections, continue to struggle and are still in danger of extinction. The undeniable recovery of most green sea turtle populations creates a hopeful spot in our changing ocean, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Catherine Kilduff. Sea turtles capture our imaginations, improbably crossing oceans for most of their lives before loyally coming ashore to build nests on the beach. The knowledge that green sea turtles can overcome illegal harvest, plastic pollution, and warming waters testifies to their resilience. And a lawsuit seeks records on the decision to end red wolf recovery. So why did the U.S. and Fish and Wildlife Service decide to pull the plug on the recovery of red wolves? That's what we aim to find out. The center has sued the agency under the Freedom of Information Act to gain public records explaining what happened. We requested the public records last fall, but over the course of 7 months, the service has sent a total of only 8 documents to the center, and it continues to ignore the law's mandated deadlines. There are as few as 45 red wolves remaining in the wild, all of them in Northern Carolina. The population has exceeded more than 130 wild wolves as recently as 2012, but it has now declined by 50% following the service's recent actions to curtail the species recovery program. The agency's obstinate behavior is a telling indicator of just how political its actions have been in this disgraceful attempt to kill off a historic recovery program and condemn red wolves to captivity, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Brett Hartle. And 2 Appalachian crawfishes have won protection. In a response to a Center for Biological Diversity petition, the Fish and Wildlife Service has finalized protection for 2 rare Appalachian freshwater species, the Big Sandy crawfish in eastern Kentucky, southwestern Virginia, and southern West Virginia, and the Guyandotte River catfish found only in 1 southern West Virginia county. Both species are under threat from water pollution, especially due to mountaintop removal coal mining, which dumps toxic waste directly into rivers and streams, taking the fresh out of fresh water. Both crayfishes, also called crawdads, crawfish, and mudbugs, have now been lost from half their historic range, and the Guyandotte River crayfish is one of the most endangered of its kind in America. Center for Biological Diversity petitioned to protect the Big Sandy crayfish in 2010 before the Guyandotte River crayfish was found to be a separate species from the Big Sandy, said the center's Kentucky-born senior scientist Tiara Curry. Protecting these crayfishes will not only ensure their survival, but also help to protect water quality for people. And an imperiled gulf fish is one step closer to protection. The Alabama shad, a large silvery fish that lives partly in the Gulf of Mexico and swims up southeast streams to spawn, occupies just a tiny fraction of its historic habitat in Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Indiana, and Iowa. Its numbers are dwindling because of dams, dredging, and water pollution. The shad has languished for decades without federal protection, despite being named a candidate for that protection back in 1997. Luckily for the at-risk fish, the Center for Biological Diversity has reached a settlement with the National Marine Fisheries Service, which forces the agency to decide whether the shad warrants protection by June. In the 2013, agency declared that the species may deserve protection, but it's more than a year late in taking the next legal step towards that goal. There's still time to recover this ocean-going fish with its historic southeast habitat, said the center's Jacqueline Lopez. Endangered Species Act protection will help guide restoration efforts that will help the shad rebound. And rare cats have been saved from hunting and trapping in New Hampshire. In response to an outcry from the Center for Biological Diversity, Animal Welfare Institute, and other groups, New Hampshire's Game and Fish Department has canceled its planned bobcat hunting and trapping seasons for this year. They would have been the first such hunting since 1989, when New Hampshire protected bobcats from the hunting and trapping that had driven their population down to only 200 animals. Bobcats aren't the only wild felines at stake here. Canada lynx, protected as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, has been mistakenly shot or ensnared by bobcat hunters and trappers. Under the state's proposed rule to allow the hunting and trapping seasons to move forward, hunters would have been allowed to chase bobcats with hounds. Trappers could have legally set unlimited numbers of indiscriminate traps. So we're relieved the Game and Fish Department listened to our concerns and that New Hampshire's lynx and bobcat are safe from hunters and trappers for yet another year, said the center's Colette Adkins. And West Coast Fisher has been denied protection in a bow to the timber industry. In a deeply disappointing, politically motivated decision, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has denied Endangered Species Act protection to West Coast fishers, reversing its proposal to protect these shy, cat-like members of the weasel family. The agency had proposed to protect the rare carnivores in 2014, but under timber industry pressure, withdrew that proposal. Protection on April 14th, despite overwhelming scientific evidence that fishers are threatened by factors like logging and toxic chemicals used by marijuana growers throughout their range in California, Oregon, and Washington. The once abundant animals now survive in only two places, about 250 to a few thousand in southern Oregon and northern California, and about 300 in the southern Sierra Nevada. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can listen to it Friday at 3 p.m. You could also tune into KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho on 90.3 FM, where the Earth First Update is broadcast at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. You can listen to Truth and Justice Radio on WZBC in Boston, Massachusetts, also on 90.3 FM, between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. You could also tune in on your internet to the Grateful Dread Public Radio, Sundays at 2 a.m., set your browser to gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. You can also find them on TuneIn and Spotify. And you can always go to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous versions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.